This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
On Brand is brought to you by Brand Driven Digital, helping you build better brands online through strategic consulting, digital coaching, and training and events. Learn more at branddrivendigital.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Bobby LeHue. Bobby is the chief branding officer at Robin, a branded products fulfillment company that creates and distributes promotional products, corporate apparel, and printed materials through e-commerce company stores. Robin's achievements include being recognized 3 years in a row by Inc. magazine as one of the 5,000 fastest-growing private companies in the U.S., numerous industry awards, an Addy, and being featured twice in the $20 billion promotional industry as one of the top 50 best places to work. Bobby is a national speaker on topics related to B2B marketing and, as an ardent bibliophile, loves a world where business marketing and storytelling make story selling magic. Bobby, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick.
Now, you talked about being a B2B marketing speaker, and that's actually where we crossed paths, literally crossing paths, as we were both at Marketing Profs B2B Forum in Boston a few weeks back. And I say literally because we were in the same room consecutively. I was speaking.
That's right. I had the unfortunate experience of having to follow you.
Oh, stop. You had a packed house in there. So, but I was speaking about branding, which I want to do here on this podcast. And you were following me on the topic that your bio closed with there of storytelling. And I think that's such an interesting topic because I think it's something that obviously with packing the room, there's a lot of interest in, but it seems like sometimes that's a misunderstood topic when it comes to applying to business. Would you agree? Or
I would agree. I would agree. It's ironic. I was sort of as taken aback as you were at the crowd at that totally topic related because my bio doesn't fill a room like that, to be quite honest. And so there was something there to the B2B world really waking up, I think, to this power of story. And I sort of stumbled across this myself, you know, as you mentioned in my bio. I've been involved in the business world for the past 25 years, and then I've also been an ardent book collector and lover of story my whole life. And these two worlds have constantly been commingling over the past several years as I work with clients. But I also wondered, what was it about the case history that was so dry and clinical, right? The B2B world is like masters of the case history. And I think it's because we took our cues on writing these and telling these from the medical community, which it's very, very factual based, right? You had a problem, we applied this solution, and here was the incredible results. I don't know about you, Nick, but I've read case histories through the years that are just astounding. The results are astounding, and yet you don't walk away with any emotional connection whatsoever. You can't even get excited about it. It's just too clinical.
Yeah, you know, I know exactly what you mean. I actually, in addition to what I do, I also teach at the MBA level. And, you know, that is built upon Harvard cases, Sloan cases. And I've actually got a stack of them on the desk behind me because I've got to select some for a new course this spring. And you're absolutely right. And it's the bread and butter of, you know, really business stories. And they are. And that's because there's great results in there. But I sometimes think that they are not done justice in the form that they take.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of that, you know, the title of that class at the conference was How to Tell a B2B Story That Is This American Life Compelling. And I truly do think that Ira Glass has tapped into a methodology that we could all learn from. And, you know, he talks about three aspects of the story of action, stakes, and a moment of reflection. And what's missing in those case histories, what's missing in those factual cases are this emotional tug and pull, the action, the compelling narrative that sort of, you know, compels a story forward. What's at stake? And then, of course, a moment of reflection. And that moment of reflection is an empathy moment. You know, why is it we're listening to the story? That's what was missing in all of those case histories is the actual narrative and the actual tension. And then I think for B2B, what really summed it up for me was a quote I had read by Wieden Kennedy. And, you know, it's astounding what little emotion we tend to put in our B2B world. But Martin Weigel, the head of planning at Wieden Kennedy, said this. He said, "Whatever Plato and Descartes may have told us and whatever some marketers might tell themselves, we are at our core driven not by reason and choice, but by far more ancient, intuitive, and often irrational impulses, emotions, and instincts. If you want to move people's behaviors, you have to emotionally move them. It is commonplace to make the distinction between artistic and commercial endeavors, the muse versus the market, commerce versus art, objectivity versus subjectivity, but these are false distinctions. For as cultural participants, as meaning creators and weavers of magic, both the artist and the salesman must seek to overcome the challenge of indifference." And in the class I talked about, in our B2B world, mapping what we sell to an emotion, because we are very highly logical, highly rational, and a lot of this comes from the 80s and 90s era of selling that was very binary. It was binary thinking. It was pros and cons, features and benefits selling. And I think we lost our way along the way to some degree and realized that people at their core are driven not by reason and choice, but by more ancient, intuitive, and often irrational emotions, impulses, and instincts. And that's where story comes in.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, because when you lay it out like that, I mean, that kind of is how we got to kind of the features and benefits land that we work to overcome, is because we want to believe that, you know, people are logical and rational, but in fact it's you know, those emotional pulls, the tugging, and I wonder, you know, I think that is something that marketers are scared of, because it seems like the concept of story, it's easy to, you know, you've got a packed room and we want to learn more about it, but almost more scary than actual storytelling principles might be involving emotion.
Yeah, that might be true. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. I'll never forget when the light bulb kind of went on for me. We have this particular product that we sell. It's a long-term sell. It's a complex selling cycle. It's about 12 to 18 months, and it's a contract arrangement. And I'll never forget, a year after we landed a big deal, I was talking to the vice president of marketing, and I said, "How are things going?" And she said to me, "You have no idea how easy you've made it for our team." And I remember thinking, you know, we sell a product. And yet she didn't come talk about the product. She didn't talk about that at all. She talked about an emotion. And that was sort of a moment for me where I realized we need to map more of what we sell to an emotion, because that's how people still make their decisions. And mapping that a little further, where story comes in, you know, C.K. Williams, the poet, said, "The human mind seems to have an all but insatiable hunger for narrative. We're driven by what seems to be a relentless compulsion to consume narrative discourse." And tapping into those two things, emotion and story. Story is like the conveyance, if you will. It's the, there's an ancient pipeline actually built into all of us that's intuitive. And we are readily available to accept a truth through the vehicle of story. And, you know, back in, back to the class, you know, I walked through the Paleolithic age, the Neolithic age, the dawning of civilization, the axial post-age, post-axial age, all the way up through the Western age, where when we discover graves and we discover ancient artifacts, they're always tied to myth and story. So in a way, we as B2B marketers in particular, we get to tap into this fascinating pipeline, if you will, where myth and story serves as a guide. And touching on those emotional touch points are crucial along the way.
Well, it's interesting you talk about story as a conveyance, and you know, I think I've I think it's the famous Hollywood script and story workshop leader Robert McKee who's talked about it's how we make sense of the world, and I think that you know some of this stuff it can sound kind of squishy to kind of dollars and cents hardcore marketers, but I think back to the idea of, you know, that it's this, it's intuitive, that it's how our minds work. And I think how this connects back to, you know, for those kind of dollars and cents marketers is the idea that you take these random facts that you're so often presented in a case study, in a history, in a report, in a white paper. And it's easy to kind of forget these facts, but if they're tied together, if they're told, if they're conveyed in a compelling story, I think that you're going to get a greater recall out of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only the recall, but I really do think the features benefits sell. Features and benefits are very, very important. Somebody might be listening right now that's working in a marketing department and they sell industrial equipment or something highly engineered. You know, a lot of those features are important. I think what has happened though, we've relied so much on those types of features. And you know, in the class I showed two videos side by side. One was the Apple commercial that shows a consumer using the product, and the other was somebody showing the product and all the different specs, right? The tech specs that nobody cares about. The iPhones that we carry in our pocket are astounding piece of technology, and the coding on that, I can't even remember the name of it, but I can tell you what I can do with it, which is the more important part. But in our B2B marketing or B2B selling, I think we had features and benefits, particularly features, as a runaway in our primary communication points. And sometimes that's allowed by other people to dictate how the story is going to be told. But as marketers, we're the professional storytellers, and it's our job to then craft that in a language that's going to be understandable. And the language, you know, one of the folks I cited was the famous Native American Indian storyteller by the name of Teyata, as she's Chickasaw Indian. And her father said, "Stories are like ragweed. Though the branches spread out this way and that, they all come from the same root." And I think that root is empathy. And, you know, Nick, you and I probably heard that a lot at that particular conference, and we're hearing that a lot these days. But that empathy is critically important, even if it's a highly engineered product. What is it that buyer is actually trying to resolve? What problem are they trying to solve?
Yeah. Well, it seems like empathy is increasingly everywhere. I might get my source wrong, but, you know, I was reading Daniel Pink's latest book, To Sell as Human, and a big part of that focuses on empathy. You know, you talked about mapping what you do to an emotion. How would you go about doing that if you were, I mean, take a company, it doesn't have to be exactly like yours, but in a similar space that, you know, is looking for that light bulb that is kind of in a land of selling products, is listening to this and is thinking, wow, we need to, we need to get us some of that. How do you go about mapping what you do to an emotion?
You listen for the things they don't tell you. If you do a survey of your clients and you ask them why they buy from you, you often won't get the correct answers. You actually have to read between the lines a little bit. And mostly, this is an odd piece of advice. You listen for the interjections and the expletives. The expletives tell you what you don't do well. The interjections, you know, the wow, that moment, that story I told you about the client that I talked to, she responded with a, whew, I can't believe how easy you guys have made my life. And once you start listening for those emotional responses like that, that aren't necessarily tied to savings or, alleviating some administrative burden, whatever the product does, it's listening for those interjections. And, you know, BuzzSumo did a study of the top 10,000 articles shared on the web, and they mapped them to an emotion. You can Google this. And the three top emotions that the 10,000 most shared articles on the web were tapped into: awe, laughter, and amusement, which shouldn't surprise us. But, you know, there were other ones. There were joy and sadness and surprise. I think the real secret is listening for not the words the client tells you, but the feelings they convey in those interjections.
I love that idea. You said awe, laughter, and amusement.
Right.
Most shared. You know, that's really interesting to think of too. And I think, you know, you talk about listening for what they aren't telling you. And I think we get into kind of data-driven mode where that's not the answer I was hoping for, Bobby. I was hoping that it'd be on the report, that it would be that right. There's this easy question that I could just go look at that answer to.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And another way to sort of map and mine that information is every order sold is a story waiting to be told. Every order that you process or your company processes, there's a story inherently there. The greatest storytellers will tell you that you can open up back in the day, you could have opened up the phone book. These days, you can Google somebody. Everyone has a story to tell. And I think every product sell, every service sell has a story to tell as well. And if you start mining those stories, like just start finding, you'll find some common denominators. And that was one common denominator for us, was mapping to that emotion of relief. That was the most common, the highest common denominator in all of this, the invoices, if you will, of the services that we were providing. It's a lot of hard work. It's not easy. But it's well worth it. And for example, I had a colleague that said, you know, I get it, Bobby, I really should do more story selling. I understand how important that is. I don't even know where to begin. And I said, let's look at your invoices. Let's just sit down and look at your invoices, because in those invoices, there's all kinds of characters to these stories. There's your primary character, which is the customer. There are secondary characters like us that are the vendor partners, and there's the project itself. And so it's actually a fun process to do and requires a little, you know, you got to beat up the topic a little bit to get to the heart of it, but it's really important.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that that's a great concept. So when you talk about story selling, what's your go-to definition there?
Oh, I think you got me there, Nick, as far as a concise story telling. I'm using way too many words to tell somebody what a story is. I know that I love what the Apache Indian Benton Lewis said. He said, stories go to work on you like arrows. And, you know, I like to tell this story from the Kiowa Native American author N. Scott Mamede. He said one thing: all things can be accepted if not understood, if you put them into a story. And he goes on to tell a simple story, and we can learn a lot from the oral tradition. I really think that the base of a story is what happened. You know, we as marketers are really good at the brushing off those interrogative pronouns: who, what, when, where, why, and how. Mm-hmm. There's your skeletal structure of the story, but it doesn't actually tell you what happened, how it happened, and what is the emotion that happened along the way. And that's what the This American Life series is really good. Why we're so enraptured by and caught up in the This American Life series is because not only do you get the factual history, but you get this moment of reflection and this what happened along the way. It's almost a progression of words toward meaning. And so I guess if I had to sum it up, because I just spilled 100 words to say it, this progression of words toward meaning would sum up what a story really is.
Well, in thinking, even you talking about, you know, using too many words and stumping you, I also wonder if another factor at play that is impacting our ability to tell stories is in the, you know, quick share, BuzzFeed culture. I mean, I think, you know, This American Life, it takes you a sec to sit down and invest and listen.
Yeah.
Are there, you know, are we moving so fast today that people are like, I don't have time for a story? that we are looking for almost these quick sound bites, that we don't want to kind of do the homework and invest in something bigger, even though what it delivers can be so much greater.
I think you're right, Nick. I really do. That's a fantastic thought. When you look at what's going on with the story world in the book community, the independent bookstores are on the rise. Another phenomenon that's happened is the serialized novel is on the rise, which sort of gives credence to what you just said on the time factor. The short, sweet chapters in a serialized novel are compelling, and that's been around for years and years. But the independent bookstores are on the rise again, and I think it's because we are all so burnt out on the micro moments of our lives, this input by 1,000 micro moments and the immersion that we're missing as a culture back into story. You're seeing independent bookstores back on the rise. Amazon just launched their first physical bookstore in Washington, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. The fascinating part about story, and I think this is important for marketers in particular, it's not easy. So we're not going to just easily craft this. It's going to take some work. But when we do, the payoff is so incredibly rewarding, and I think it's because it's a completely immersive experience. There are folks, like I'm one of them, that I much prefer the immersive experience of a novel, and even a physical book, even though I'll read all kinds in all different ways. It's this willingness to invest in something bigger than ourselves. And maybe that's what makes story hard for us in business, is that it does require that type of work.
Well, to those concerned with that, are there smaller helpings of story?
Yeah, in fact, that's a great question. In Scott Momade has this narrative wheel, which he calls the narrative wheel, and it's how he tells a story. And he uses three aspects or three viewpoints. One is myth and lore, which is like the voice of the elder, so it's tradition. The other is history, the actual history, the historical context of what happened along the way in the business. And the third is memoir, these personal reminiscences of your own experience through the story. And there's three little micro stories within a story. There's the myth, history, and memoir. And to sort of extrapolate that, bring that into the business world, myth is incredibly important in the business world. Take the Dartmouth did a study on the garage entrepreneur, the myth of the garage entrepreneur. A fascinating study, because what they found was that despite the fact that a lot of these myths that we believed in the garage entrepreneur aren't real, you know, they didn't actually happen the way we think they did or the way we're told, we still have this incredible affinity for the garage entrepreneur myth. Most entrepreneur businesses are incubated inside other businesses. That's what's kind of fascinating about that. And almost always requires a larger community than what is assumed. Yet we love myth, legend, and lore. And to bring this into business, and for ourselves personally, we think, how many people love tapping into their heritage? Like, Nick, you probably have looked into the heritage of your family, where you came from. Our legends around our lives are incredibly important. And so is the case with business. In some cases, after that conference, in fact, one marketer approached me and said, you know what, I knew we needed to tell the story of our business's beginning, but I was getting so much pushback, and you've given me the conviction now that I need to go back to the C-suite and really help them craft a strong narrative around our beginnings. And it's incredibly important. So there's one micro story that you could tell. Another micro story is the history along the way to be aware of your company's history. There's a great article in Fast Company that I encourage everyone to read. It's called Why Companies Need Novelists. The Pakistani writer Moshe Ahmed said that internal stories, stories that we tell each other, are as vital as external stories, stories that we tell our customers. And there are generally three important times when you need internal stories: when a company is born, number two, when there is new leadership or an acquisition, and number three, when a company seems to have difficulty growing. So history. So you have tradition, myth, lore. Then you have history, what's actually happened along with the business along the way. And then memoir, your personal reminiscences of what has happened. That can be personal reflection from people involved, from board members to community members to customers to employees. But, you know, there's so many ways we can break apart a story. You know, I'm reminded, too, of the quote by Wendell Berry, you know, great writer, who said that telling a story is like reaching to a granary full of wheat and drawing out a handful. There's always more to tell than can be told. And so I do think we as marketers have to break down these topics into tiny microscopic stories.
And where do these stories live? I think, you know, if there's also a hang up maybe that marketers have, it's like, okay, so there's this book that we've written that's somewhere, but does story infuse other tactics, other marketing vehicles with greater meaning?
Oh, absolutely. Not only that, I think this is why marketers often become champions for the brand, because they're closer to the brand story than maybe a lot of other employees are. But something interesting happens in a culture when you start tapping into the power of story. You begin infusing that in narrative all throughout the company. For example, salespeople, you know, the best salespeople have always been great storytellers. They always have, whether it's 50 years ago or today, they've always been fantastic storytellers. But often we will have sales team, for example, asking us for leads, asking us information, when we should be turning the tables and asking them for story. And then what happens when we return that story to them in a carefully crafted narrative, whether that's written or video form, we begin to infuse and empower the sales team with more effective tactics, if you will, to approach customers. So it's such a general but a powerful impress on the company as a whole once you start tapping into all those.
Yeah. Well, I love that point about, I was just thinking about what you said about the best salespeople, and I know I can think of many cases that prove that to be very true.
Yeah.
So if brands want to get better at storytelling, what advice would you give?
You know, I would lean on, this is going to sound funny, and it's a long way around, and I think this is going to be taken very, maybe some people are going to love it, because there's a lot of storytellers in the marketing community. I think you should fall back in love with the short story. Somebody asked me once, you know, how, you know, I get what you're saying, how do I tap into a short, potent narrative? And I think it's, if you tap into some of the short stories of, say, Lydia Davis or James Salter, if we can remove ourselves from the micro noise that's happening within our social streams and sort of plug back into the power of story through those traditional vehicles, it still can be read on your iPhone. But short story reading is one of the best ways to start getting the narrative in your head, perhaps some technique in your head, and feeding, and along the way, you'll be feeding your soul. The same, you know, I really got a kick out of this when Anne Hanley said it. If Anne said it, it's got to be true, but I always felt it myself and had to tell her. I was so excited when she said it. Poetry is one of the most important places for you to relearn the potency of language. And between those two, I think if you start studying and reading and putting more of that into your life, maybe for every 20 articles you read on the web, you're going to go promise yourself you're going to go read a poem or a short story, because what it does is that it puts you, it sort of makes you fall in love with language again. You know, N. Scott Momaday wrote this: Language has undergone a process of change. We take such thing as words for granted, as indeed we must, for nothing in our world is so commonplace. On every side, there are words by the millions, an unending succession of pamphlets and papers, letters and books, etc. We have multiplied the word, and words have begun to close in upon us. We are sated and insensitive. Our regard for language as an instrument of creation has diminished nearly to the point of no returning. He wrote that back in the 80s. I bring this up because he goes on to say, when you start infusing your life with good storytelling, good short stories, good poetry, good literature, the storyteller is created in the process. And when you begin writing stories, even if it's for your own business, Mamadeh says and believed that the storyteller himself or herself is transformed by the power of story just by being so close to it, just by conveying it.
So where do you go to get story inspired?
I laugh because I'm surrounded as I speak. I'm surrounded by so many books, and I'm that's where I go. I go to my favorite writers. You know, the Wendell Berrys, the Frederick Buechners, Lydia Davis, and Isaac Dennison. I think some of the literary greats. I also love to tap into short stories. I love to see brands that are telling, you know, cool stories. UPS, of all people, what the most fascinating. Nick, I don't know if you saw the closing video on one of the classes I did, but showed this video of UPS. And there are some brands telling some fantastic stories today. So I'm not a Luddite. You know, I don't ignore technology, but I try to tap into more traditional sources.
I didn't see the UPS video. What is that? And maybe I can embed it in the show notes.
Yeah, here. Actually, I will email that to you. And I forgot Perfect. The name, but I will email that to you. It's fantastic.
Cool.
But as far as where I go, I really do tap into some of the poetry and prose writers that I love. And I think this affinity for language is something that I found. And one more thought, Nick. Sorry, I'm going long. I know.
No.
Native American culture has a high regard for story and always has. To a level that is unlike our experience. You know, my family has both Choctaw and Chickasaw heritage, and story in the Native American culture is incredibly important. So, and now we have begun finally to receive many of these in written form, and so that's another place I go for inspiration.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, yeah, and you know, we're recording this obviously as a podcast, and I'm a huge podcast enthusiast. But that was one of the things that that drew me to stick around the room at the B2B forum was talking about This American Life, because where I go is frequently to stories via audio, and I think that NPR has such a masterful kind of command of that. I mean, even outside of This American Life, this morning. On my run, my new favorite is one called Hidden Brain.
And
it's great because it's brain science, which you'd think could fall prey to, you know, kind of all of the baggage we were talking about with case studies.
Right.
And it occurs to me as you're talking that they are telling it through story, that they are going finding people that are stories that are demonstrative of the studies that they're really just using the studies as reinforcement of the stories, which is very interesting.
Yeah. And in fact, I'm glad you mentioned the podcast. That's another place for inspiration for me as well. There is the Guardian Short Stories podcast is brilliant. So is the New Yorker Fiction Short Stories podcast. I'm like you, I'm a podcast junkie, and there are a couple other places where I go as well.
And I didn't know either of those. You said New Yorker Short Story?
New Yorker Short Story. New Yorker Fiction is what is going to be in podcasts in iTunes, and then Guardian Short Stories. There's one other one called Selected Shorts by PRI, and it's fantastic as well.
Awesome. Well, we will include all of that. Now, you were talking about UPS. As we start to wrap up, is there a brand that has made you smile recently?
This is so narcissistic. I can't believe this is the brand that came to mind when I asked this question. But two brands come to mind. One is Fry Boots. I don't know if you're familiar with Fry Boots, but the reason why Fry makes me they're you know, I think a couple of hundred years old traditional company that handcrafts boots, and I'm a huge fan. But I love their marketing now. They've gotten into the maker community, and they're doing some interesting videos around makers. So they're selling. It's an interesting end around to say, hey, we're makers too. But I kind of like what they're doing as a vibe with their brand right now. And then another narcissistic one is, God, I can't believe I'm going to say this too, but I like Ralph Lauren. And here's why, Nick. I have friends that are listening to this. They're going to give me a hard time about saying this. Ralph Lauren said, I love this, what he said. He said, I'm in storytelling business. And the reason I love that so much is because when you buy a shirt and you're looking at that receipt, you're not thinking you just participated in a story, but you did. And it was so powerful and so subtle. And the fashion community and the nonprofit community are two areas that have really done story very, very, very well. And they don't do that just in video. They can do that in a snapshot. And when I mentioned that, you probably thought of a Ralph Lauren ad or something like that. You know, it's fascinating. And one more comment on this narcissistic thought on these brands. We as individuals, the reason why story is important is that we project ourselves into the role of the protagonist. The reason we empathize so much and the reason why it's important for us as salespeople and marketers to tell stories that are around our customer's hero is because other customers identify themselves as that protagonist and they project themselves in that role. And it kind of makes it easier to convey what it is that you want to do.
Well, I have to ask, first of all, you keep saying narcissistic. Are you wearing Fry boots in Ralph Lauren right now?
I'm afraid I am. That's why it's really narcissistic.
I was putting together my own story from the pieces from the trail you were leaving. But right. I love that Ralph Lauren quote too, because it makes me think of a few episodes ago we had Denise Lee Yan on, who wrote a book called What Great Brands Do. And one of the questions in there is, you know, what business are you really in? And, you know, usually the best brands are not just in the category that you think of them, that, you know, a Ralph Lauren is not just in the clothing business, that it's so much more. And I wouldn't exactly know how to describe it, but until I heard that quote, but that hits the nail on the head. That's why that's, you know, indicative of their onlyness, of why there's only one Ralph Lauren.
Right.
So, Bobby, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
You can go to my website, bobbylehew.com, BOBBYLEHEW. I will warn you that only my mother reads it, so you can go there and be the second viewer of the. It's sort of where I play, so poetry and novels, novel I'm working on and all that kind of stuff. You can find more about me there.
Awesome. Well, we will be sure to link up to all of that, and we are sure to create at least visitors two and three. I can guarantee that okay. from the wide listenership of the podcast here, if not more.
Awesome.
Bobby, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Appreciate you.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our listeners. Erica Krakowski recently gave us a shout on Twitter for our episode focused on brand personality and purpose, featuring Nathan Sinsabaugh. Erica, thanks for listening. And a reminder, if you, like Erica, heard something that you liked on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let us know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. We will link up to everything that Bobby talked about, including some of those great videos from UPS, brands that made him smile, BobbyLehew.com, at BrandDrivenDigital.com. There you can also find information on how to subscribe to us via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over, give us a quick rating or review, help others find the show. And finally, this podcast is brought to you by Brand Driven Digital, your source for helping you build better brands online through strategic consulting, digital coaching, and training and events. Learn more at, you guessed it, branddrivendigital.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe. This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.